DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Those people are the freaks, man.
Rice.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Big Jim.
I told you. What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you? Because I told you.
Samantha.
I am going to have regular sex with you whether you like it or not.
Not another podcast.
Bedroom in the bathhouse, one of the two. I mean, ball's in your court, champ. However you want to fucking process this, it's up to you.
Big Jim's bathhouse.
Bubbling Jim's piss house emporium.
I think you just titled the episode.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten started yet.
Oh, no, we started. We started.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
As soon as the call started, we started this shit. Welcome to Not Another Podcast. I am James.
Bryce is not here, so I will say I am Big Jim, or I'm Jim 2.0.
Taking a massive piss.
It's so good.
It's like from that Adam Sandler album.
Oh, The Longest Piss? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Again, things that I'm screaming in my neighborhood, in front of my neighbors and whatnot, so.
Well, it makes for, you know, they look forward to Fridays, because.
That's when the piss comes.
What's the bumbling chud going to do this week? Do they have chuds where you are?
Oh, yeah, no, they do. They do. Actually, Chud, the original film, Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers, was filmed, supposedly, in New York. So, it's more East Coast than it is West Coast. It's just got more love on the West Coast, I think, than it does on the East. Because, well, fuck, man, chuds are so common here. There's, like, a chud X-ing. There's, like, a chud crosswalk. There's a chud elementary school for, you know, previously.
I think West Coast just identifies with chuds easier.
Yeah. Well, it's easier there. You know, I mean, it's easier to sort of differentiate yourself from a chud. As opposed to here, we're just like, I had no idea. For 14 years, I was a cousin to a chud.
Who knew?
Who knew?
So we're going to continue on our just, what should we call this? A look into the craziness of news?
Fucked up news or...
Fucked up news? I could go with fucked up news.
Yeah, because it's now more than ever. Gone are the days of, you know, Walter Cronkite and all the classic trustworthy news organizations, trustworthy newsmen that would bring to you stories of the world that were hard-hitting, that didn't pull any punches, and they're now filled with clickbaits of, so I went to vote for Trump, and you won't believe what happened next, and then you have to click on it, and it turns out that, you know, I bought a box of Cheez-Its, and things turned out okay for the country.
Everything's fine. No, it's become, like, anyone with a access to the internet and a keyboard can become... And no one has any journalistic integrity. No one has any, no one really wants to tell the truth. They just want to tell their versions of events. It's opinion news is what it is.
Yes, which is not what news is supposed to be. News is supposed to be cram-packed full of unbreakable, unquestionable truths.
Facts.
That the people of the world need to know. Yeah.
Researched, vetted, fact-checked facts.
Vetted checks. Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm trying to use every buzzword I can think of, and I ran out. Oh, you finished peeing. Finally.
Oh, God. Just, I feel like 75 pounds lighter.
You didn't wash your hands.
Well, fuck it. You know, it's like I have to touch my hands to make this podcast happen. But speaking of weight loss, how much weight have you lost since you've gone through your transformation?
Oh, shit. I was actually going to tell you. This morning I put on – it's starting to get warmer here, finally, because, you know, April.
April in Portland.
It's still wet, but it's warmer. It's a warm rain.
It's a warm kind of moist. Conceal that shit, Hudson. Oh, too soon?
Too soon, dude.
Too soon.
So I put on these shorts that I haven't worn since last summer, and when I wore them last summer, they were not snug, but they would stay on my body. Today I put them on, zipped them up, buttoned them up, took a step, and they fell off.
Oh. as hilariously disturbing as that image is, how good of a feeling is that for you?
Dude, I have, in the last 4 months, I have lost 40 pounds.
Good for fucking you.
And the loss continues. I have no idea how much I've lost in March. I haven't done a weight check yet. Because I only do it at the end of the month, first of the following month. Because I don't want to – I've said this before. I don't want to be one of those people that gets, like, totally obsessed over every single pound.
Because this is just my own personal opinion, but I feel like the moment you do, somehow your body kind of slows that process down.
It does, I think.
And then, you're sweating over, like, oh, well, I'm at, like – you know, I don't know where you're at, but, like, yeah, I'm 271. Why can't I get to, like, 269? Why can't I get those two last little fucking pounds off?
Exactly. Because
you're sweating them. Because they're holding, they're clinging desperately to you. Like, no, I don't want to leave you yet. Let me stay with you. I was once a McRib, and you loved me.
I was once a barbecue rib.
Yeah.
I'm already, like, focused on enough as far as this journey goes. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to say, like, I'm obsessive, but I do actively think about, like, everything that I eat, how much I take in and, you know, how much I work off, like, all of that. Like, I'm constantly thinking about it.
Good for you.
And it's like, and it does affect, like, how much you enjoy a meal.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, this is a fantastic steak, but I really should only eat half of it.
Yeah.
You know?
As it's 72 ounces, and if I do finish it within the hour, it's free. But, no, it's, you know, I understand with what you're saying 100%, even more so.
Yeah.
Just because there's that old just fucking shitty cliche that us fat guys have heard since the dawn of time, which is nothing feels as good or nothing tastes as good as looking good feels. Well, when you start putting forth the effort to make that change in your life happen, and you see the results, and you start making that momentum, and you start, for me, it's like moving a 40-year-old rock. I'm trying to get this rock that's been mired in muck and crap for 40 years to move forward. When you start seeing that ball slowly start to roll, it empowers you. You get excited. And yeah, you do truly understand what a portion size is supposed to be. And no, super size is not technically a portion size. It is a size that is portioned, superized in some capacity,
yep,
filled with, like, all kinds of horrible garbage and whatnot. And yes, there are days, man, I will tell you, there are days when I will see a commercial for a delicious steaming burger that's just, like,
oh,
just ensconced in cheese and just shrouded in bacon, and just like, oh, we found five other disgusting things that we never thought to throw in a burger before, but now we do. We had archaeologists digging through some old Mayan temple to find this old recipe, and now we have it, and it's mastered, and it's here for you for only $4.09. Get here soon, otherwise they'll all be gone. And you're just like, you know what?
Yes!
That's for some other guy. Yeah, no, that's what I want to say, but that's for somebody else now.
Yeah, it's...
You know, and you got to change your mindset.
Yeah, and I got to say, like, when I first start, like, I'm only 4 months into this journey. Like, I'm not even a year. And I'm having to look ahead because my wife and I we're married 10 years this year. We're taking a cruise to celebrate 10 years of wedded bliss.
Congratulations.
And
fuck
we
real.
Both know that.
Oh, yeah. And where are we going?
It's not going to happen during that week and a half we're on vacation.
Because you're locked on a floating buffet.
Buffet,
that you can't get away from.
The only thing that I can do is, and by the time we get there, I will probably be a lot better about this, but the only thing that I can do is, number one, I'm not going to deny myself anything. That's the whole point of a vacation,
yeah,
you know, is to indulge. The only thing that I'm going to do is, number one, be mindful of everything and expect spikes in my blood sugar when I check. But also take advantage of the fact that on this ship there is a gym.
Yeah. Oh, what's this?
So I don't have to skip my daily workout.
Yeah.
you know? And my daily workout isn't that long. It's 20 minutes. It's a mile walk. I can do that around the ship.
How long does it take you? How long does your mile take you?
About 20 minutes.
About 20 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, and that's moderate walk.
Yeah.
So,
do you have any ideas how many fucking, like, shawarma stations and just, like, you know, just, like, burger joints and, you know, fried dough, slip and slides you're going to have to walk past during that hour?
Well,
during
here's the fun thing. We don't know this ship. We've been on this cruise line before, but it's a brand new ship that we're going on, which is cool. But we have looked already because they've got like the blueprints of the ship. Where the area to walk, like if you're just doing like a walk, there's no food. So I'm good. But to get to the gym where the treadmills and exercise bikes and all that stuff are, there is a myriad of ice cream and burger. And so we're going to have to dodge all that, you know, to get to the gym. But even worse, even just sticking with like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the food that they have is so extravagant and so good that it's like, for me, it's like I will have to physically go, okay, I've finished half my meal. I really shouldn't eat anymore. Oh crap, here comes dessert. And if it's anything like our last cruise, the guy that we had, because when you go to dinner, you get the same serving. There's three different restaurants that you eat. So you rotate during the course of the week, different restaurants. But you get the same wait staff.
Is this W-A-I-T or W-E-I-G-H-T staff?
Yes.
Okay.
But by the end of the cruise, like, you can sit down. They know exactly what you want to drink. So they'll have that ready for you. You know, they get to know you during the week.
just a pint full of drawn butter, just like melted butter in a pint glass. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. But the last time we went on this cruise, we called our wait staff the dessert pushers, because they would give you your meal. And then at the end, they would bring out dessert. Now, we had the later meal service, so they were just trying to get rid of the stuff before the next day. So you would order your dessert, but he would bring out everything.
So sloppy seconds discount dessert tray shows up.
So it's like, okay, yeah, you know what? I want to try the baked Alaska. Okay, so here's your baked Alaska and the pie a la mode and the cake and the brownie. Go for it. It's like,
yeah.
Well, it'd be rude not to.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy.
So you know, we'll have to see if that's what happens.
Well, and like I said, in under normal circumstances, not to take anything away from your diabetic needs and everything else, it's one thing for someone to want to lose a bunch of weight to look good for a cruise that they're just basically going to throw all that hard work away for the week that they're going to be gone to wherever they're going to go to.
Yeah.
Like you said, with you, you have to deal with blood sugar spikes. There's a little danger in there in that, you know, you can put forth all this hard work and get to that good place with yourself and feeling better about the food that you eat and everything else. But it takes very little for you to kind of slip back to that old bad habit, or for that one little slip to kind of cause more damage. So obviously it's a lot more difficult for you to do so. I commend you both for undertaking this. And I did see a picture of you doing K-Pam's morning show with Miss Mackey. And it was, I think it was, that Jamba Juice was there. And you were dressed up like a giant. Dude, I swear to fucking God, I almost did not recognize you with how much weight you've lost. I am so fucking proud of you for all that hard work that you've done.
You know, and I was just talking to my mom about this actually the other day. When you're losing weight, you are the last person to notice. Like, I've been on the scale 4 times, and I know that weight's come off. The scale has told me every time I've gotten on that weight has come off. When I look at myself in the mirror, I don't see it. I really, really don't. But, like, I'm constantly being told, it's like, wow, you do look a lot better. Like, and I guess it's, like, especially in the face.
Yes, yes.
And for me,
which is one of the hardest places to lose weight.
Well, that's the first place it came off for me, so.
There, Fat Face Robinson just showed up to town. All right.
So it's weird. Like I'm only just now starting to tell. Like this morning or the other morning, like I woke up and for the first time in years, my stomach was concave.
Wow. What's
yeah.
What's that like, bro?
It's weird. It kind of freaked me out. I thought I was I'd become emaciated overnight.
Did I poop several major organs during the course of last night, and I just don't remember it? Like how many times do you wipe the lower intestine?
Speaking of poop, that's the other thing.
Could we please?
And like all men, I think I really do enjoy a nice good poop.
Oh God, it's best time of the day.
I get a lot of reading done, a lot of research for the show gets done. When you eat a lot of junk, a lot of fast food, your bowels just hate you.
Oh, without doubt.
And Jim, you know, you've just many a toilet.
Oh, like I have wrecked some fucking porcelain in my day. I'm just saying. Not proud of just it, but kind of
cracks under the weight.
Oh, just I've never gotten up once. No, I have gotten up several times off of a porcelain and actually heard the bowl kind of wince and wheeze a little bit. Just like, okay, are we done? Is it over with now? And then like I watched the toilet take just a crime shower. Just like leave me alone for a while.
Don't look at me. One of the things that I really enjoyed, starting this journey was learning about diuretics and things that help your digestive system.
By L. Ron Hubbard?
Yes. It's a great book.
Yes.
Talks about the man in your colon.
Well, no, it's basically about a spaceship that crash landed in your colon centuries ago. And all these ghosts of old foods that you've consumed now live in there. And the thelin count, which is like, I guess, your cholesterol, needs to rise to a certain degree so you can sort of expel all those demons from you. And that's the story of yeah.
And that's why Scientologists are all thin.
Yeah. Have you seen a fat Scientologist? I don't fucking think you have. I don't think anyone's ever actually seen a fat Scientologist. Who's not fat? Let's see. Kevin James, not a fat Scientologist. You know what? Who is? John Goodman. He converted, which is why he's thin now. That's fucking rub. Unintended. Sorry.
God, we just saw John Goodman in something, and I was like, God, look at how fucking amazing he looks.
Yeah.
And then I looked at myself and went, holy shit, I'm John Goodman.
I found all the weight that John Goodman lost. Fuck. I'm like some...
No, actually, what's really funny, and not to poke fun at him, but I think he would agree, since I've been on this journey, Bryce has gained all the weight I've lost.
I'm convinced, man. I swear to God, as sure as God makes little goddamn green apples, there's only so much fat that exists in the world. And when you lose some, somebody
else...
It goes
to someone else.
Yeah. Energy can't be destroyed. It can only be passed on to somebody else. So what you do is you lose the weight, you pass it on to somebody else, and then you post on Facebook how happy you are so that poor fat fuck recipient can look at it just like, oh, so that's the bastard that ruined my fucking favorite pair of jeans. Fuck you,
you
Isaac.
You son of a bitch.
I'll see you at the fucking buffet line.
God damn you. No, so that's one of the big jokes. Missy Mackey has also commented that since I've gotten the beatus, she's lost all the weight.
Oh, so she's kind of...
She's losing weight for me and several other people.
Vicariously, she is losing weight through you. Interesting. So you're like a fat funnel, in a sense. Like you are absorbing other people's fat and then like also processing it through yourself. So you benefit, as do they.
I'm kind of fat launderer.
Wasn't that a 50s song? They call me the fat wanderer. Yeah.
No, launderer. Like a money launderer, but with fat.
Yeah,
fat
not
comes
wandering,
through me,
but
I clean it and send it back out into the world.
Yeah. There's Rosie on my chest, and the reason why Rosie's on my chest is because I had a fucking heart attack, and she's trying to give me CPR to resuscitate my fat fucking ass. Anyway.
So it's been a really interesting – but getting back to the pooping thing, I took –
Could we?
This is probably the grossest show we've ever done.
Oh, I just fucking agree, but please go ahead.
In one of the first months that I started this journey, like my body, because I started taking in like a lot of, I started eating a lot more greens, a lot of salads, you know, just a lot more vegetables, getting fiber into my system, which is great for getting down your blood sugar. I didn't know that. I would have been eating a lot more salad.
Yeah.
So after about a month, my body had finally had enough, and I took one of the best poops of my life.
Like biblical, like, you know, it wasn't like so much a poop. You felt almost like, and this is going to sound even more gross, but at this point, fuck it, let's cross that line. Almost,
why not?
Almost orgasmic in the fact that once you pass it, you get up and your butthole does that weird kind of trembly thing. It's just like, I've had this.
Yes.
I've had this for too long, and now you finally got a young priest and an old priest to get you a fucking salad down your throat and a couple of apples, and now the demon is gone, the house is clear, thank you, and your butt says, mwah, it kind of kisses you from the inside.
The weirdest part was I stood up, and I actually had stomach flab. You know, someone who loses a lot of weight quickly,
yeah,
and the skin can't, like, get, you know, it doesn't shrink back quick enough,
yeah.
So you have flab. I had stomach flab. Not a lot, but it was like, this is hanging a little looser.
Well, I'm
like, I got up, I flushed down probably 10 pounds worth of recycled meat.
Oh my god, like meat that doesn't even exist anymore, like, you know, buffalo.
Yeah,
should
yeah.
gone extinct, like dodo meat.
Mastodon.
Yeah, mastodon. So it's like, I don't even know what compartment to flush this into. I'm just gonna throw it down the weird, like, Indian food takeout slot.
Someday an archaeologist will dig him up and find a baby mammoth.
Yeah.
Tusks and all. But like, I walked out of there and like, I even noticed, like, as I was walking, I was stepping lighter. like I had lost so much weight, gravity couldn't hold me down properly.
It's like, we used to have him at a 7, and now he's at like a 3. Like, I don't know. Who do we even call to take care of this whole thing?
I was like, I looked at my wife and said, do we have some twine? I just want to tie it around my ankle just in case.
Just in so.
I start floating away. I want to be anchored somehow.
I feel like this weight loss came a little too late, because I just saw the trailer for the new It. And you could have been one of the balloons. You could have been like a little James-shaped balloon. Yeah.
Can we talk about how epic that trailer looks?
I got it. Well, okay. So I'm...
To switch gears from pooping really fast.
To terrifying clown movies? Yes. I think that's a cursory step. Not really a step forward or back.
From gross to terrifying. That's what this show is.
That's the name of
the
show.
There's the title for the show.
Exactly. Right there. From gross to terrifying. So I was on YouTube the other night. I got off of work. I was just trying to sit back in the backyard and kind of relax for a little bit before I went to bed. And I look up, and in my feed, like, one of the first things was trailer for the new It. And I'm like, okay, I'm a little bit torn. First of all, the old It, the original It, was only good because of Tim Curry. The other actors, John Boy and even Seth Green and Dave... what's his name from Night Court? The judge. Anyway,
Seth Green wasn't in that.
Yes, he was. Yes, the fuck.
Was he?
Seth Green was one of the young kids. He was the comedian before he grew up. He wore glasses. Yes, yeah. Trust me on this. Seth Green was in. Seth Green from Robot Chicken.
I'm looking this up. It's not that I don't trust you. It's just that I don't trust you.
You shouldn't trust me at all. But no, I promise you. Seth Green was in that. He was one of the young kids. He was the comedian before the comedian grew up. Anyway, so with that, I have a love in my heart for the old It. But when I watched it recently, I saw just how, like, much my nostalgia kind of overran my desire to kind of look and see what a really good horror movie is supposed to look like, especially one that's, you know, penned by Stephen King. So I had that on my heart when I saw this trailer. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to hit click play. I'm going to watch it anyway. And it doesn't look like they do too much with the adults. Maybe they're going to save it up for a sequel, like an It 2 or something like that.
I think that's
the
actual plan. Like, this movie is to focus on the kids, and then they're going to do one in – it won't be next year. I think it's the year after –
Because, I mean, at that point, like, the only thing I saw in the preview were just little kids. And I don't think there's too many spoilers in this. And it's a fucking preview, so who gives a shit, really? But I liked, like, they kept kind of hiding Pennywise in the background. But the way they kind of worked him in slowly, like when they're all sitting around watching the slideshow, and all of a sudden the slide machine starts going, and it goes from just like, you know, one frame at a time to the same picture kind of slowly going, it almost turned into like a motion picture, and you see Pennywise's face kind of slowly turn to the camera. And the best part at the fucking very end when the little brother Georgie comes back. He's in the basement.
Georgie's sitting there, like, trying to tempt his brother to come with him.
He's like, well, y'all float down here. And they start screaming. And then he just sort of, like, almost like he's some kind of weird clown marine, kind of comes up through the muck. And, like, you see his eyes first.
Pennywise the Seal.
Yeah. Pennywise 6. Seal Team Pennywise. However you want to fucking quantify it. He looks so fucking badass. And so he comes up through the muck. And then that fucked up crazy clown run towards the kid, and then just fade to black. I'm just like, okay, this shit may just have solidified my money. I may just have to shut the fuck up and just throw cash at the movie theater until they let me in.
Take my money!
Yeah, I'm done. I want to get scared by some creepy fucking clowns and some little kids.
Here's where the trailer had me. Georgie's running after his ship, his little paper boat, and smacks his head on that barrier.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm in because I am that kid.
Yeah.
Just like, you're so into, like, you're not even paying attention to your surroundings. You're, gotta get the boat! Yeah. Smack!
And even the pain from that, you'd be like, ah, it's secondary. I gotta get my goddamn boat.
Yeah, yeah. And he does. He gets right back up, and, like, the fear on his face when that boat goes down the sewer, and he's like, no! And I knew it was going to happen. Like, he's looking in the sewer and Pennywise's eyes pop up. I mean, that's like, it's so obvious. But again, that happened in the book.
Yeah.
I think this is a lot closer to the book than
the original,
the 80s one. Yeah. I'm with you. I think Tim Curry was great, but the makeup and stuff that they did for Pennywise, Tim Curry played that excellently, but the clown wasn't scary. Pennywise wasn't scary in that.
You don't think Tim Curry was scary?
No, Tim Curry playing him was scary.
Yeah.
But the actual... Like,
oh, from
if,
the... Oh, okay.
You know, he just didn't look the way that... He didn't look as scary as Pennywise as I think they could have done. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, physically, he wasn't scary. But when Tim Curry, you know, brought him to life with his mannerisms and stuff, then he became scarier, but he still wasn't terrifying the way I think Bill Skarsgård is going to play him.
Skarsgård. That's what that was. And for a hot second, I actually thought it was not Jason Lee. Who the fuck was it from... God damn it. Okay, it's, Jason Lee, from that TV show, about the karma and the lottery ticket, and he's got to go and do right by everybody.
Oh, my name is Earl. Yeah, I think it is Jason
Lee. Yeah, I thought that was Jason Lee for, like, a hot second, just, like, shaved and, like, looking better or whatever. Because it's
with the makeup
and everything else, it's hard to really discern. All I saw was like the picture of Pennywise, like, you know, with the It emblem behind him and his eyes kind of looking up. So that's what I kind of thought initially. But I don't think he could pull off a scary character like Skarsgård can.
One of my favorite shots in the trailer is a total fucking homage to Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah.
It's you know the one I'm talking about. Pennywise is approaching the kids, and the camera's focused on his hand, and he's doing the Freddy Krueger finger flex. You know what I'm talking about? But he's got those nails. I was like, okay, I gotta give it up. They're doing a nice little send up to Nightmare on Elm Street. It's cheesy as fucking hell, but in that trailer, it looks really good. So you know,
I'm certain enough in the fact that you know, with the source matter. And this is something that that has plagued, I'm sure, Stephen King for a while, whereas a lot of his horror movies have a hard time truly getting traction, because when the first, like when Carrie hit, and that movie, yeah. you know, was like such like a groundbreaking film, and you had Academy Award winner What's Her Twat as Carrie.
I love everything What's Her Twat does.
For real. It's just,
she's so
good. Gift. She's a gift to the cinematic community. But, I mean, you had, like, it's like an all-star cast. You had Greatest American Hero in that. You had Vinnie Barbarino in that. You know, but yeah. a lot of times afterwards, they kind of threw too much money and not enough time into designing the pilots, or not the pilots, but the scripts for these major motion pictures, where a lot of Stephen King's horror films really, I feel, kind of took root were like the miniseries, like Rose Matter, which was like a 5-part miniseries. The Stand, which I thought was really well done, and kept pretty true to the book. But stuff like was The Shining. Obviously, Kubrick took a lot of liberties with that because, you know, he's got this great subject matter. He's also a brilliant director, so he's going to sort of put his own spin on that whole thing. So there was that sort of in the middle here and there, but where a lot of times where Stephen King really kind of his book translations to movies actually get appreciation, it gets forgotten that Stephen King was the one that wrote it. Like, you ask most people on the street, you know, who was it that wrote the original book for the movie Stand By Me? They'd be like, I have no idea. Well, who wrote the original book for Shawshank Redemption? Well, I don't know. Well, who wrote the original book for The Green Mile? I don't know. Stephen King, fucking horror master. Yeah. But he doesn't just write horror. He writes good suspense. And that's really what kind of guy I think got lost in the sauce over the years. So,
well, and then you take a look at some of the things that have been made into movies, successes versus failures. Christine yeah. is a fucking epic yeah. book. Terrible movie. Yeah. Terrible fucking movie.
Absolutely.
It just it was so poorly done. And then you get a book like or a short story like Dreamcatcher.
Oh, great short story. Horrible fucking movie. That's my opinion.
See, I think the movie wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. Yeah. I think a couple more script passes and you would have had a really good
well,
movie.
Well, something that...
But there's some subject matter, I think, that just doesn't translate well from the page to the yeah. screen. And I think Dreamcatcher, as great as that story was, I just don't think it was translated well from the page to the screen.
I can agree. And I think one of the reasons why that movie in particular kind of fell short, and why several other books of Stephen King's who I would love to see translated into Philly, I don't think ever will, is that there's an ongoing theme in Stephen King's short stories. Like there's like this, well, it all boils down to The Gunslinger and The Tower and seeing what he calls the line. And that's where the line is supposed to originate from. The whole thing that Duditz had in Dreamcatcher was he could see the line. And because he was born yeah. with Down syndrome, he wasn't either taken seriously or he was just more conceived to be a simpleton by that time frame and those folks, because he kept referring to this thing that nobody else could really understand. But when he got this group of friends, somehow that power that he had kind of got seeped into these friends of his. And that's how they were able to kind of have that similar power. And that's why when Duditz got in trouble originally, they all kind of came back together. And that same line yeah. is the same line that permeates from The Tower throughout all of Stephen King's stories in some small minor way, one way or another. Everything from Desperation, which is a fantastic book about if you've ever driven through, well, you've been to Montana, so you know about driving down long, lonely fucking roads where there's, if you run out of gas or blow a flat tire and you don't have a signal, you are 9 different shades of fucked. This just encapsulates that so well. And several of the Bachman books that he wrote also incorporate the idea of seeing the line. And Insomnia, which, again, is a very underrated book of his. also deals with that in a slight cursory way. So he's got this brilliant idea that I don't know, and this is just a fan's critique of Steven. I don't really feel that maybe that underlining connection has been as well explained out there to the general masses. All they see is, well, he writes books about big scary dogs and resorts that I don't want to stay in all winter by myself, or virgins that I don't want to piss off in the shower because when they get their period, they're going to fucking start killing people. You know, I don't want to be in this whole world, but there is this underwhelming or this underlining kind of thing that's going on there. And either the readers don't kind of pick up on it or the diehard fans have. And it has been documented that is a thing. But when it comes time for them to write the screenplay for it, ultimately that kind of gets left by the side because more often than not, they're like, well, it would take too much time and too much money to kind of push that to the forefront when it hasn't been as well documented up until this point. We'd be the first book or the first movie that's doing that, except for the fact that The Gunslinger is coming out, and the previews for that look fucking spectacular.
Is there a preview for it? Because I have yet to see a preview there for it. Okay, I got to check that out.
Yeah.
Idris
Elba
as
the fucking gunslinger, and rad as fuck. Dude, does he look badass. And so that whole thing, I really hope that movie can either sustain or fully explain that aspect of the line and be well enoughly received that a franchise can be born from it, because that's really what it means.
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think both it and The Gunslinger are going to kind of revitalize Stephen King as source material, and we're going to see a lot of reboots of Stephen King material and a lot of new movies based on Stephen King material. But here's, you were talking about the theory of the line.
Yeah.
Something else that is prevalent in every Stephen King movie in some form or another is the loss of innocence.
Yes.
Every single book. Some of it is blatant. Like, for instance, it's the loss of innocence of the group of kids as they learn about, you know, the evils of the world.
And Stand By Me is almost a straight up fucking declaration of loss of innocence. Yeah.
But you can even look at it in a story like Salem's Lot. The town itself is innocent.
Yeah.
You know, that all the characters you meet are innocent in some form or another, and they all lose that innocence, either succumbing to becoming vampires or fighting vampires.
But is Salem technically an innocent town, or is it more the young protagonist that's innocent, just kind of moving there? Because obviously, Salem's Lot, it's Salem, man. It's where the witches were burned. So obviously, they're not innocent. I think that's where the vampire...
Wrong Salem, buddy. Spoilers. Wrong Salem.
Spoilers. But spoiler, Salem, Oregon?
Yes. No, Salem's Lot is Jerusalem's Lot.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Yeah, you're right. Never mind. Sorry.
But I think the town itself is not the innocent. The town itself is actually what takes away the innocence of the people living in it.
Yeah.
You know, in a sense. But just like we were talking about Dreamcatcher, the loss of innocence there. It's those kids bonding together with Dudditch to fight against bullies, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, it's the loss of innocence there. Firestarter, the loss of innocence for Charlie.
Yeah, yeah.
As she, you know, tries to protect herself and her father. I mean, you could pull it out of any... Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, oh, totally, yeah. Andy Dufresne's loss of innocence from being an innocent man.
He didn't lose it until he went to jail. I mean, he even says in the book, I had to go to jail to become a criminal.
Exactly.
You know? Every single book that he writes is about loss of innocence in some form or another, and it's up to the reader to figure out where it is, who the innocent or what the innocent, and, you know, follow that journey. He's a very prolific writer.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I think, unfortunately, because his writing, when he wants to go horror, he can go full tilt bozo and just scare the bejesus out of you. But not in like a direct kind of like gory, like, you know, hostile kind of gore porn kind of way, but like in a very slow burn, draw you in, and then before you know it, like you don't want to go to sleep because you don't want to know what's not on the next page, but at the same time, you're afraid if you turn off the lights, you're going to see the shit you've been reading about for this whole time. He can do that, but in the same time, he can also write these incredible stories that have very little to do with, like you said, with horror, but more with the loss of innocence. One of my favorite books of his is called The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. And it's about a girl that gets lost in the woods. Her family goes off for a hike. She gets lost and turned around and has to survive on her own for like a week. And all she has to keep is she's got this little radio, and she's listening to this baseball game, and her favorite player, Tom Gordon, is playing. And so her love for him is what's keeping her alive. He has this ability to sort of, you know, bend so many different emotions into the page. A lot of times because he's so good at one end, and that's what really got pushed to the forefront originally with Carrie and stuff like that, that's all they kind of see him as. And they forget about the other stuff. So ultimately with this new era coming out with Gunslinger, which I never saw the Gunslinger. I don't know if you read any of the books, but I never really caught the Gunslinger as a horror story. It was a Western with like a sci-fi kind of feel.
Yeah. See, I would agree. I would call the whole Dark Tower series a sci-fi adventure.
Yeah.
Rather than, because it crosses worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. At one point he's actually in our world. You know?
Yeah. So, you know,
honestly, with the exception of It, I honestly can't think of a single Stephen King that's blatantly horror. Well, Jerusalem's Lot, but that's a short story, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Cycle of the Werewolf is a short story, but that's horror.
What about Silver Bullet? It's all about werewolves and shit.
Well, that Silver Bullet is Cycle of the Werewolf. The short story was called Cycle of the Werewolf.
Oh, you're going with the actual titles, not the Hollywood titles.
Well,
excuse me.
The reason is I've been reading a lot of Stephen King in the last couple of years. Like, I've been going through like just some of my favorites and discovering ones that I haven't read before. And the beauty is I get them on audiobook and I listen to them at work. And people wonder why I have horrified expressions on my face. No, it's not that you're asking me you want me to do something. I'm just listening to just some god-awful stuff. But, honestly, I would consider him more of a suspense writer than a horror writer.
Agreed, yeah.
You know, because things like, even The Shining that's got horror elements in it, it feels more...
It's more suspense.
Yeah. Misery is the same thing. It's definitely got a horror feel, but it is more of a suspense thing. It's will he get out or won't he? You know?
Yeah.
Shawshank Redemption is a dramatic suspense.
Yeah.
You know, most of his stories, I would into a suspense category, not a horror category. Again, with a few exceptions. I think Christine, Cycle of a Werewolf, It, Jerusalem's Lot. And even some of those are... more suspense, especially Jerusalem's Lot, because it's a vampire story, but it's more suspenseful in that it kind of feels like a detective story.
Yeah.
You know, these people trying to solve this issue, which essentially is vampirism, but it's like the question is it real or not? Yeah. And they are fact finding to discover that yes, it is in fact real. And then it becomes like a chase thing.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I would agree. Even like when he does do a story like Christine and the others that you mentioned that are, you know, point of fact, horror based, it's still horror suspense. Like, he doesn't do horror for horror's sake.
No, he doesn't do straight up horror.
Yeah. If you ever get a chance to, or if anyone listening, all four of you, get a chance to read a book written by Stephen King.
No, we're up to five now.
Sweet. All right, well, welcome, four strangers. It's so nice to have you hear our voices.
Well, I was going to say that three of the listeners are actually on the show.
Oh, okay. Well,
so we're up to two listeners.
All right. Well, shit. Welcome. Plenty of room on the couch. Grab some cushion. But Oh shit! What was I gonna say? Crappity.
I agree.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that we can agree on the fact that the thing that I can't remember saying.
Well, since you lost your train of thought, you want to do the crazy stories we found this week?
Yeah, might as well. We get a little bit of time left here.
So we decided this week that we were just going to find the craziest atypical news stories. They don't lean left or right. They're not religious in nature. Just fucking bizarre stories.
Yeah.
So I found two that I really liked, and I'm gonna do this first one because it's not so much crazy as just fucking what the fuck is wrong with you people.
Okay.
I'm just gonna start with the headline.
All right.
5-year-old girl suspended for playing with stick gun.
Oh shit.
This comes from Hokie County. A local mother is outraged that her 5-year-old daughter was suspended from school because of a stick that resembled a gun. And there is a picture of the stick gun.
Thank God.
And it looks more like a T to me than a gun. It started Friday when her mother got a call from the principal about a playground incident. Caitlin explained that she and her two friends were using their imaginations playing king and queen. In this case, Caitlin was the guard protecting the royals and picked up the gun to imitate shooting an intruder into her kingdom.
Yeah.
Hokie County School said Caitlin posed a threat to other students when she made a shooting motion, thus violating policy 4331.
That'd be fuck-leavable.
She made a shooting motion.
A shooting motion, yes.
With a stick gun.
They specify whether it was a pow pow motion or a pew pew motion?
It does not say. We are this close to the edge, my friends. We are this close to outlawing imagination.
No, that's exactly. As soon as you said they were using their imaginations, I'm like, that's the rub right there. That's the thing that really kind of it boils down to. Because if she held that stick gun in any other fashion and didn't make a pew-pew or a pow-pow motion, thus using her imagination, there would be no issue. She would just be holding a piece of
it
in her hand.
Why was it a gun? Why they were playing King Queens. Was it not a crossbow?
Ooh, see? And is there a difference between a combustion-based projectile weapon or a melee weapon or a bow-based launching apparatus, much like a trebuchet or a crossbow, like you said?
Maybe it was not a gun. Maybe it was some sort of bar sword, and she was stabbing at orcs.
Well, here's the thing. Orcs deserve the right to go to school, too, and they've been bullied. Poor orcs have been bullied.
No. I am not going to allow you to talk about your orc agenda on this show. We are anti-orc, and we will always be anti-orc.
Your anti-orc agenda will not stand, man. I mean, at what point, when they came for the frost giants, you said nothing. Okay, when they came for
the frost giants deserved it for what they did to the dark elves.
For the cave bears, again, you said nothing, and now they're here for the orcs, and you're grandstanding on the fact that maybe they should be marched off into small imagination camps where they're forced to be thought out of existence. I mean, this is the reason why I truly love South Park, and I always will, and I really wish they could make a solid a comeback as they used to be. Like, now, even if there's a new episode of South Park, you don't even hear about it anymore. But, I mean, their whole imagination, the way that they can take pop culture and just twist it and show you just how fucked up and ridiculous the shit is that's going on around us. This little girl had a fucking piece of a tree that she pretended was a gun. Yes, which guns are dangerous when used improperly, i.e. by 5-year-olds. Now then, if this particular apparatus that she was using to pretend as a weapon was, a handful of fucking peanut butter, it would have done a lot more fucking damage to other fucking students potentially than a piece of fucking stick would.
Chasing students around to taste my peanut butter.
Because everyone knows orcs hate peanut butter. They're allergic, and they'll go into fucking anaphylactic shock, and Lord knows no one can afford a fucking EpiPen in today's school systems.
I'm sorry, I have to cut you off. Your facts are wrong. It is not orcs that are allergic to peanut butter. It is an
So you're saying that all orcs can't be allergic? There's not a few orc crossovers?
Orcs orcs have nut allergies, but peanuts are okay because peanuts are not actually nuts.
Yes, I'm aware. Yes.
Yes.
The whole legume allergy issue will never be brought forth into the Senate or our government as a whole, or even a partial. So, yeah, that just...
The orc consortium does not recognize peanut allergies.
They've got long arms and deep pockets is what they've got.
Deep pockets. They are in tight with the
Well, they've got
farmers.
Bags of ever holding, so they can just keep reaching in there and just looking deeper and deeper until they find the item which they need. And that's my whole thing is...
You, sir, your nerddom is
thank
strong
you. Thank
today.
You. I woke up this morning full, like my nerd was fully erect. But, you know, it's just, like you said, as soon as you read the headline, immediately your just head starts to shake and you're like, oh, fuck this shit. But, you know, the fact that, okay, as much as I can't stand a lot of things that go on in our educational systems today and what's considered zero tolerance and what's considered, you know, intolerable, I kind of get the fact that peanut allergies are a very real thing and that some people can be so allergic to peanuts that if one touches them, they can have they get hives. They can, you know, go into any kind of number of different, you know, shock or other reactions. If they consume it, it could be potentially fatal. That I get. But if it's a stick or a finger and you're running around on the playground and you're just having a good fucking time and all of a sudden you get yanked out of your element and thrown in the principal's office and suspended when you're 5 fucking years old, you don't understand shit about fuck. And yet somehow you're trying to be made to be like, well, she was making threats towards other students. No, she's making threats towards people trying to attack her king and or queen. I'm not sure which side she was on either way. You know,
unfortunately, Jim, I think you're making light of children with bark allergies and wood allergies. You know, she posed a very serious threat. She could have given people splinters, for God's sake.
Splinter my fucking ass because of this bullshit. Because these people with... It's just, it's so ridiculously over the fucking point. And the thing that drives me the most insane is when shit like after Columbine happened, the NRA had the fucking nerve to hold a rally just outside of that town to show the government that they'll be damned if they're going to take the guns from our fucking cold hands or whatever the fuck. That is something that they're willing to rally behind. Something as absurd as a little girl playing with other little kids and she picks up a stick and is just like, bang, bang, I got you. That does not mean that the kid's going to grow up to be a fucking sociopath unless you put shit like this in her fucking head at age 5. The fuck is she going to grow up?
And where is the threat from a stick gun? I mean, where is the threat? I mean, again, it's coming down on the kid's imagination. Yeah. You can't use your imagination. That's wrong.
It depends on the caliber of the imagination.
That's telling her. And here's the problem I have with that. If you tell kids as early as 5 that they can't use their imagination, here's what happens. They no longer can use their imagination, so they can no longer think creatively.
Yeah.
You get rid of creative thinking, you get rid of the possibility.
Yeah.
For out-of-the-box thinking, which leads to planes, cars, cures for diseases.
No, and what it leads to more than anything else is a mass of people that is terrified.
Easy to control.
Easy to control. Is incapable of independent thought. You know, because, well, this one time somebody with independent thought up this horrible thing that happened. Yes, that's true. And then another time, somebody with independent thought also thought up the fucking cure for polio, thought up the cure for any number of other diseases, also thought up, you know, how to create an artificial limb that gave someone that was born without them the ability to stand and walk for the first fucking time, that gave somebody that was born with the ability to hear for the first fucking time. All of those things came from imagination and the ability for independent thought. But that's not what this country wants for its people.
You know what else came from imagination?
What's that?
Movies.
Yeah. Or no.
Without
imagination,
we would not have great movies like Star Wars, RoboCop, Predator, all of these fantastic movies. You wouldn't, someone would not have written Jaws if they didn't have imagination.
And we're back to Stephen King.
We came
that's
full circle
right there.
We are running out of time, dude. Do you got a story?
I do, but unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have time to get to it. I think this was a solid show either way. I mean, it ended with some wood, and it started with, fatness. So I think it's fiber all around.
We did name the show, what was it, Gross and then Creepy?
Yeah, so I think it kind of went like gross and then just creepy and then angry and then silence. But that's too long of a title. I think I like yours better.
Gross, and then creepy. Okay, brother, we will say goodbye to you. We will wish Bryce well, and we will all reconvene next
Friday.
Absolutely,
Smurfly. We'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.